But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Welcome to The Wealth Show. I'm Daniel Grote, Citywire's data editor, and I'm joined today by Dan Hurdley, Managing Director at ARK Research, which many listeners will know for its private client indices. Dan, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dan.
You're in the studio today to talk about Model Portfolio Services, or MPS, ahead of the launch of ARK's first MPS indices in the second quarter of this year. Now, ARK's existing indices, which have been around for 20 years and that collate the performance of around 350,000 portfolios, both bespoke and model, run by more than 125 wealth managers. Why the move into providing indices focused specifically on models, and why now?
Sure. The current private client indices don't include the performance of the model data. So it's only the private client segregated mandates. And we've been seeing increasing demand for model-specific, particularly MPS-specific information. MPS has grown massively over the last few years as well. Very large proportion of IFAs are using MPS solutions now. And there were some issues with the private client index methodology that didn't sit so well with the way that models are run and put together.
I mean, I guess it's a reflection of how wealth management is changing, isn't it? And that there has been this move towards models and to some extent at the expense of the bespoke portfolios that are the bedrock of the private client indices. So that's changed to some degree what you need to provide.
Yeah. I think there's obviously still a place for private client segregated mandates, but I think they tend to be larger now with more specific requirements. And post-RDR, post-sort of consumer duty, advisors are seeking certainty of outcomes. So a more centralized approach is more appealing. And so obviously a model where everyone gets the same thing is a really helpful vehicle.
And looking at these indices, what do they offer, or what will they offer, that existing benchmarks don't? I mean, I've seen, looking at model portfolio fact sheets, you see the PCI indices, your own PCI indices, IA sector averages, sometimes PIMFA indices used as a benchmark for performance. How will your...
Well, this will be specifically solutions on platform. So it will be an average of the actual sort of models that people are running. So I think it will be a very relevant data set for people who are looking at a model solution, trying to understand where it might sit against other models they're considering. The PCI have been a good proxy for that because it is still private client performance. But as I said, we've sort of started to get more demand for more specific data. So it's really demand led.
And so feeding into these benchmarks, you'll have 500 models from 70 investment managers. What portion of the MPS market do you think you'll be capturing?
It's really difficult to say. I mean, some of the data we've seen suggests there could be another, 50 to 100 firms that we could approach. There are firms that outsource their MPS to another provider, so we would need to know, how interested they would be in having them in the indices. So I think there is an opportunity for a lot more models to be included in the index, but we're starting with a really good data set. Within the private client indices, we have a very high quality list of the top providers in the UK, and many of them have been launching MPS. Some of them have mentioned with the launch of this new service that they are about to launch a new MPS service, so it's very timely that we can offer something specific to them as well. It's a growing market. I think there's lots of opportunity for us.
And I guess that difficulty you have in sort of specifying exactly what portion of the market that you're representing, I mean, that speaks to the amount of data there is on MPS, doesn't it? And just that it's not the same as funds. It's much harder to get a grasp of a performance data on MPS than it is for funds.
Yeah, and that's why we're hoping we can bring the same transparency to the market that we did with private client data. When we first set out with the private client indices, it was very difficult to find out anything about private client performance. It was a real dark pool of data. And with MPS, there is more information out there. The model fact sheets are available, so you can go do your own exercise where you go provider by provider and gather data. But to have it all in one place, I think it's going to be a really helpful tool for IFAs.
And this will be actual performance, won't it? Because I mean, when you look at some of the performance data that there is on MPS, sometimes it will be what the provider is reporting as how they've delivered. Sometimes it will be a simulation of what those kind of positions in a portfolio would generate over a particular time period. But what you're collating is the actual money that individual clients have made from their MPS. No.
We've spent many years engaging with platforms, trying to get the underlying performance data. We do have an engagement with one platform whereby we can see the actual outcomes, and we have been using that data to validate the performance of some models. But it's become very clear that it's not an engagement that platforms are particularly well set up for. The data requirement that we have means they would have to undertake IT work and things like that they're not that keen to do. So actually getting the underlying performance is very difficult. We will, of course, get that if we can. Some firms can provide it, maybe they own their own platform. The indices will be based on model performance. Now, we are bringing some rigor to that in that the solution has to have been available for investment. We won't be taking any synthetic data or sort of pro forma data for a new product, for example, that you've alluded to. And by saying, it has to have been invested on a platform, there will be people out there that are experiencing returns from it. And so if the model doesn't match up to reality, I'd like to think we'd hear about it. We also want to understand how the model returns are being calculated. So our sort of starting point was, well, okay, you're running a model. Are you running it with a third-party provider that is calculating the returns for you? Because that obviously has some rigor. Is there any sort of audit process on the performance numbers you're providing? So it will be model-based, but we're doing everything we can think of to try and make sure it's as rigorous as possible. And hopefully in the future, we might be able to start collecting that underlying data so we can shine more of a light on the actual returns as well.
So, and I may be missing something here, but just so I'm clear. So it's model performance rather than actual performance in pounds and pence. How do the two differ?
So the differences that we've seen where we've been able to look at the data from the one platform provider showed that the models are really a very, very close match to the reality that's being experienced. Across different platforms, though, there might be different funds available. So the manager has to implement slightly differently on a different platform. So straight away, there's going to be a difference there. You get fee differences between different platforms as well. And to a certain extent, you're sort of beholden to the rebalancing that's going on the platform. How long does that take? Is it implemented efficiently? That sort of thing. So those are the things that tend to cause a lag. Where we saw sort of a big disconnect between the model and the reality on the data that we could check, it was down to a particular underlying holding just wasn't available on that platform. So they'd had to implement something else and that led to a difference. But generally, the finding was that this platform, the models were actually pretty close to the reality.
And those models, and I appreciate I'm kind of getting into the weeds of this, but would you be looking at the performance of the model on the platform where there's most money in that model, or how would you?
So, yeah, this is where we start to get into the differences between sort of the private client indices and the MPS indices. You know, as I say, you've got different fees, you've got different implementations. And so what we said to the manager is we want the most common version of the model. That might be the one that's got the most in AUM. It might be the one that's got the most clients. But the most common thing that people are going to be seeing. And we did look at other approaches, maybe taking an average across different platforms, particularly when it came to fees. But then you end up taking a fee that no one is experiencing because it's an average across a load of platforms. And in some cases, there might be a special situation on one of the platforms where the fee is higher or lower, and that skews the result. So, we're asking the manager to be pragmatic and just say, what's the most common? And obviously, we will have a conversation about what that is and what that means. And we're writing to everyone at the moment doing just that.
And I guess that is one of the major differences between the private client indices and these new MPS indices, in that the private client indices are net of all fees. These aren't these MPS indices, and you've kind of alluded to why. So it's the advisor charge, but also the platform charge that won't be kind of factored into those performance figures. With the platform charge in particular, and you've mentioned that, you know, it's hard to do because it will differ from platform to platform, but I guess we would be talking there about the kind of platform service fee, but also the transaction costs of moving in and out of investments. Those would be the main things, wouldn't they?
The transaction costs would be in the performance figure. I think we would like to try and get that included. So what we're trying to do is get the cost of the investment. But yes, the costs that are on the platform are going to be very difficult to capture. And so if there is a particularly expensive platform, that's something that the advisor will hopefully be researching. You know, advisors are becoming increasingly fee conscious. They're very savvy about which platforms are offering sort of the best rates and that sort of thing. So by just saying, well, if we can just extract the investment cost that the investment manager is able to extract, that's what that thing should cost. Now, where are you going to go and buy it? Where's your cheapest place to get that implemented? I suppose is their next decision.
Because I guess I'm thinking about situations where a platform charges per fund or ETF or investment trust transaction, and you've got a model that's rebalancing quite frequently, making quite frequent changes. Those can all add up, and particularly if it's a smaller portfolio. In your work, sort of looking into this, have you got a sense as to sort of how big an impact those platform charges can have on ultimate returns?
Yeah, they can obviously be relatively high. Platform costs have been under pressure, as everything has, so they're coming down, and you've got new players coming into the market with new technology, with more efficient processes that are able to offer very, very reasonable rates for those sorts of things. So as I say, people have to shop around, and I think the market will sort of decide on that side of things.
But I mean, it is a frustration, isn't it? And I can, you know, I see the reasons why, why it is so hard to account for those sorts of charges because they differ from platform to platform. But it is frustrating that something that will be a universal sort of part of the investment experience for clients, that there's just no real way of getting that reflected in the performance numbers.
And you know, I think this is one of the reasons it took us so long to get to the point of publishing a series, that the absolutely squeaky clean way of doing it would be to get a bunch of platforms to give us their data, calculate the underlying returns, and use that data for the indices. And it is something that's, it's very clear to us, is not something that's going to happen soon. So we would rather have something out there shining a bit of a light in the best way we can, bringing as much rigor as we can, albeit to a situation that's not 100% as good as we'd like it to be. And with that, there is some data out there that has some rigor in it, rather than it being sort of slightly wild west, as you sort of said, where people are sort of publishing all sorts of numbers, pro forma data, synthetic data that they've calculated themselves, all that sort of thing. So it's something that we are going to be able to bring a bit more rigor to, and as time goes by, maybe we'll be able to start collecting more and more of that real data to then really investigate exactly what the full costs are.
And that kind of cooperation from platforms, I guess, ultimately, the best outcome would be for that to change, and for the data to come from platforms. Because, I appreciate this is more a statement than a question, but it does seem mad that such a large part of the financial services sector, the MPS sector, has been growing and growing and growing, and that you can't get an accurate reflection of what clients are making.
Yeah, it's really tricky. This is one of the differences that I was getting at when I was sort of saying, you know, the need for an MPS index was we were having conversations with investment managers who wanted to use the private client indices as an index against their model. We would say, that's great. Can you show us any outcomes? And the answer was, no, we don't own the end client relationship. It's on a platform where the advisor is in control. And it became clear to us that we had to do something else other than sort of the private client indices approach. And we've spoken to a lot of platforms, and they all seem to have the same thing. You know, they work on very narrow margins. It's a cost to them to provide this data to us. So I can understand their position. Our hope is that as technology improves, this is the sort of thing that they will be able to do in future.
And one of the other major differences between the private client indices and these MPS indices is that the MPS indices are asset allocation based rather than kind of risk based as the PCI ones are. What led you to kind of a different approach with these ones?
So with the private client indices, we were trying to recognize that there are lots of different ways of running money. Private client bespoke portfolios can be quite different even within the same firm. You've got a big cloud of different outcomes. Especially when we first launched the indices back in 2008, there was, typically it was very bespoke. Everyone was different. Centralized investment was quite unusual. And so the risk-based approach worked really well there. It's outcomes-based. We're saying, well, how did you spend the risk budget you were given? We're going to assume that the risk that the portfolio is exhibiting is what you were asked for. And therefore, that's a valid way of then comparing apples for apples. So one portfolio might have been run with a very traditional stocks, bonds, cash approach. One might have been run with a very multi-asset approach. The risk levels were the same, so they were both imbalanced. And we can then say, okay, which one did better? What were the outcomes and why were they different, sort of thing? So it's very backward looking, and it's exactly what a private client wants when they're saying, how did my portfolio do versus everyone else's portfolios? With MPS, what we have are advisors looking for solutions. So they're much more forward looking. So they've undertaken a suitability analysis. This client is balanced. These are the sorts of outcomes that I'm looking for. And this is what I think the setup is likely to be. And MPS is much more regimented. Typically, it's very sort of asset allocation based in the way it's set up. There are different ways of doing it. There are typically more than four models as well. So we've gone to a five index series in this case. So typically sort of 5 to 10 is common. And so it's this sort of idea that the advisor is forward looking. So they're choosing solutions rather than saying, how did my solution do? That's the sort of key difference. And alongside it, there will be a number of metrics, there'll be a search tool, all that sort of thing. So it's really designed for people looking for solutions. Obviously, in terms of the reporting the outcomes will include risk-adjusted analysis, they will include risk measures. You'll be able to see if there's a disconnect in terms of the risk, the actual realized risk, and the asset allocation, for example. So it's not just a really rigid, it's asset allocation based and nothing else. We're recognizing that obviously risk-adjusted returns are still important. That's how ARC's business really sort of was set up. It was key. It was really that key difference in the backward-looking versus the forward-looking sort of approach that we were trying to address.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the criticisms of the PCI indices and that kind of risk approach is that you do get this situation where if there's a kind of an extreme market event, say for the cautious index, the cautious portfolios that do really badly in that event and, you know, lose more money than they should be doing, they will just automatically get shunted up to a higher kind of risk band. And so it, you know, maybe flatters the performance of the the cautious.
It's not, I mean, we've taken steps within the methodology to address that. So it's a relative risk-based approach that we use. And by doing that, we're Xing out the equity market volatility. And that's typically the driver of those sorts of events. So the buckets expand and contract as equity market volatility goes up and down. And that keeps the portfolios that are contributing fairly stable. We also manage what happens if a portfolio goes out of bucket. It can stay out of bucket for 12 months. So there's a decent length of time before it gets reclassified into another category. And what that means is we can see the tidal flow. The averages do move up because the portfolios are allowed to go out of bucket for a bit. We see the averages move up. You can see there's generally more risk in the market. With the last 3 years, though, we have seen a difference because the last sell-off, the 2022 sell-off, was driven by fixed income. And so that did cause a problem because we had volatility in an asset class that wasn't equities. And so that did tend to push cautious mandates up the risk range more than you might have expected. What we've done with that, in some cases, we've managed that buffer, that 12-month buffer, where we know that a set of portfolios has always been cautious. Maybe it's a more centralized approach, so you can see, yes, all those portfolios have moved up. So we've been able to reset the 12-month counter to keep them in cautious. We're allowed to do that within the methodology. We don't like to intervene, but that is something that we can do, because we realize, you know, no methodology is ever going to be perfect, and sometimes things don't work as you expect. But generally, yeah, it's been okay. Where people are reporting on a solution, they can report on whichever solution they like. So you will see managers with an MPS solution licensed against the indices, and they will be reporting their cautious still against the cautious. But if you look at the risk profile, it might be elevated at the moment. That should all go away in September, hopefully. But that's the one sort of issue with a risk-based methodology, that if you get strangeness in volatility like we've had, then obviously it's gonna cause some differences in what you might be expecting.
And broadly, given the size of the MPS market, so Morningstar puts it at £139 billion at the end of 2023. It's probably a fair bit bigger than that now. Do you think investors and advisors are getting the data that they should? And do you think your benchmarks will change that?
I think there's certainly an appetite for more data, more search tools, more filters, more believability. And this is why we're doing it. The indices were announced a few weeks ago, and in that time, we've been approached by a number of providers that we don't currently work with, asking about them and asking what's involved with taking part. We've had advisors contacting us saying, "When's it going to be available? What's it going to include?" So I think there is certainly an appetite for the information. We're keen not to just do the same thing that other people are doing, and so we are trying to do things our way, do them the ARC way, which is sort of bringing rigor. We're trying to innovate. We're trying to make sure that the tools that we're providing are sort of relevant to the people that are going to be using them. And so there has been discussion. We had discussion with some of the larger MPS providers while we were still forming our ideas. We had a round table with all of the investment managers that are currently in the PCI invited, where we showed them what we were thinking of doing, posed some questions, that sort of thing. So there has been a lot of engagement, and hopefully that means we will actually launch something that people want and adds value rather than something that they don't. But the proof of the pudding will be in May when we launch.
Well, I look forward to seeing the benchmarks when they do launch, and anything that brings or shines a bit of a light onto the sector, I think, is a good thing. So, Dan, thanks a lot for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.